Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers, and it's brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, which takes place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. And I'm proud to say that my panel on guardianship is now a permanent fixture there. Thank you very much. Hold the applause. Anyway, my guest tonight is a longtime friend of mine. In fact, when I first started out in radio, and many years before I even had my own show, we worked together fighting, that's how we actually met, USDA, Premises ID and National Animal Identification System. We were also fighting the onslaught of GMO crops, and you see the result of all of that. We were successful years ago, along with hundreds of other and probably thousands of other people, and fighting the USDA and stopping premises ID, which was actually a conveyance of title of property, your agricultural property, to the USDA. It was a conveyance of title, and they could sell it without reserve, only you didn't know this. And this was when, and Debbie discovered this, they started referring to landowners as stakeholders, not as landowners, not as property owners. And there is a difference in law between the term property and premises. Property is covered by the Constitution. Premises is from the international law of contracts. So it carries no constitutional protections. So it's anytime somebody refers to your property as a premises, you correct them immediately and tell them it is not a premises, it is your property. But anyway, this is how I know this idea. And we have worked together all these years on various things. And she has become, over the last 5 years, the vice president of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. Now, their focus has been to try and stop the Bureau of Land Management under the Department of Interior from wiping out and obliterating and managing to extinction the wild horses and burros. And they very nearly have gotten the job done. She has been instrumental in doing massive amounts of research, developing white papers, and she has got to be the FOIA queen. And so with everybody, I wish you would help me welcome Debbie Coffee to the show. Deb, what's up? You can talk. It's okay. Go ahead. Uh-oh, she can't talk. She went
there. Can you hear me?
Okay, hold on. I can hear you
hear
now.
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Yeah.
Sorry
Go
about
ahead.
That.
That's
anyhow,
okay.
What we're seeing right now, we've been alerted that the Department of Interior has requested a massive number of records for destruction. And
okay.
Americans owe a big thank you to Russ Kick, who's really brought this issue to the forefront on his website called altgov2.org. And it's
okay.
Kind of business as usual for the government to destroy records. But you know, Russ discovered, he requested from National Archives, like what the government agencies were going to request, what records were the agencies requesting destruction. And
okay.
We found out there's enormous scope of issues, from retraining records of harassment cases for only a year to destroying records about pesticides and environmental compliance. And this affects everything in America, from our public lands to our civil liberties.
Yes.
A very troubling aspect of government agencies destroying many of these records is that we'll give government agencies a loophole so they can circumvent the Freedom of Information Act. And I'll talk more about that later, but I think the first and most important question all Americans need to ask is, why do these records need to be destroyed? With the technology that exists today, we should be seeing that these records are being preserved permanently, not being destroyed. The Department of Interior is already saving emails on the cloud. So, and you know, another issue is that by destroying many records, these agencies are removing the ability for oversight by the public, and they're basically erasing the history of their actions.
Yes. Deb, remember when we were fighting USDA before and we found out that the Oracle database, we were trying to FOIA, and they kept saying there was nothing, and we found out the Oracle database was being held up in Canada, and the excuse for not releasing information was because those files were not held on American soil. They did not have to. That was John Podesta that owned Oracle at the time. I don't know if he still does, but he had set up the database in Canada. So everything was held up there off American soil, and they said they did not have to comply with FOIA requests, and that's how they got away with not providing the information that we asked for. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I know of another instance where FOIA was filed for a database, but the requester was told that although the records inside the database, they should be able to give it the public because it was available by FOIA, the database itself wasn't. So they designed that database knowing that the public should be able to access that information with FOIA.
Right.
So you wonder, why did they deny this to the public? And basically, this is such an important issue because the American people are continuing to lose both government transparency and government accountability. This is happening at a time when the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, has scrubbed thousands of pages from the internet. It's reduced the information available to the public by putting everything, instead of having like their state office websites, it's all on one big BLM national website. And so you can't find a lot of stuff on that national website now. The stuff's gone.
Right.
So the fact that now they're wanting to take these, you know, destroy these records sooner, or get them out of the you know, their agencies where they can't be requested via FOIA. And I guess partially I want to explain to people, because I have filed, you know, probably about 150 Freedom of Information Act requests, and I've also been to a National Archives office. And I have to say the people at the National Archives office have been very helpful to me. But here's the deal. Mm-hmm. When a person files a FOIA, you know, you send the request to your whether it's BLM FOIA, USDA FOIA, they look at it and they send it to a program office where they'll find the people who know about the issue or can locate those documents. Once the government agency sends all of these records to the National Archives, it would be very inexpensive and not easy for most people to go to Washington, say to Washington, D.C. or Maryland National Archives facilities, or and even if you did go there, they group their documents by agency, you know, record groups, and then subtopics,
right,
like wild horses and burros, and then by years, and they're in boxes. So even if you did go to the National Archives office, you'd have to sit there all day long and sift through boxes containing many records you're not seeking in order to try and find the records you're looking for. So not only would it be time-consuming, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. So in effect, once records go to the National Archives, it puts them out of easy access to most Americans, and it makes it even more difficult for researchers and journalists to find the records.
Right. And you know what this is all about. This is about destroying the evidence. There has been so much corruption, so many violations of standing laws, environmental protections, invasive species protections, all across water rights, environmental pollution. There has been all of it for money, people profiting at the expense of our environment. Mm-hmm. And so what they want to do, if I understand this correctly, is destroy all the evidence that would expose what they've been doing. That's actually what they're after. If it's not available and
so
you
too.
Can't find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They want to
specifically see, that a lot of these records have to do with compliance and you know, the oil, the offshore drilling records, the oil and gas records, the mining records, the records they want to destroy. It's not just the records that exist now, it's records in the future. So even even if, you know, and when I'm looking at the department, say just the department, this covers a lot of government agencies, you know, Forest Service, Department of Interior, you know, this group right now that's up for public comment covers a lot of government agencies. But just looking at the Department of Interior's request for destruction of records, what I'm seeing is that even if the current retention doesn't differ from the proposed retention, in other words, if the current retention is 25 years and the proposed retention is 25 years, what is actually happening is that many more documents are being specified for destruction, you know.
Okay.
And then it's kind of interesting to see that – yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's kind of interesting to see that some of the records the Department of Interior seems to be in a real big hurry to get rid of, like in 3 to 5 years, has to do with water and the wild horses and burros, because people are looking very closely at those two things.
Right. One of the things I noticed in all the material you sent me, Deb, was what they want to do is get rid of the employee relations records. Now, if you followed this show at all, you know we've had the Women of Forestry on. And last week we had two men from Forestry on who had been assaulted and targeted by other employees, supervisors and such in the Forestry Service. And they have a terrible time with the EEOC. They have a terrible time with the OGI. The Civil Rights Division is absolutely dysfunctional to a point that it's just absolutely mind-boggling. But this would, as we talked about, if the DOI gets away with this, each agency is going to do the same thing. They're going to use this same premise and do the same thing.
Well,
this would destroy all these records.
Yeah, and I can't be, you know, I just learned about this last week, and I've started going all these records. But I am fairly certain, Marty, that that is an agency-wide policy to get rid of harassment complaint case files.
Yes. Well, and I think at the USDA, where we got 18,000 complaints from, like, the black farmers and women farmers, Indian farmers, you know, of discrimination and refusal to allow them access to programs and loans and things like that to try. And they've taken 23 million acres of land from them now. And so all these complaints, they were there under Vilsack. They were under this new Sonny Perdue. They're still there. Nobody's doing a thing. And the thing that bothers me is if this passes, if they give them this, and it'll be used by every agency, like you said, they'll get rid of all of those and say they don't exist. They don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any record of them.
Mm-hmm.
Which they're trying to say now, well, the what was statute of limitations or something along that line has run out on it. Well, it was the USDA that let it run out, didn't respond in a timely fashion like it was supposed to. So this would allow them to get rid of all of those complaints, wouldn't it? Just absolutely any record of it.
Yeah, they could say no records, you know, can't locate them or no records. You know, and
records.
Especially if National Archives is being instructed to destroy them, you know, a year after the cutoff or 3 years, whatever it is. I have to look more closely, Marty. I don't have it right in front of me.
So,
and actually,
it goes from the agency to the National Archive. How long does it take from the agency to go to the National Archive? Do you know?
Well, here's kind of what I know about a quick overview of the process. There's been very little attention or public oversight to this issue because the process is basically kept out of the sight of the American people. When federal agencies want to destroy records, they have to get permission from the National Archives. So what they do, they send, you know, there are set schedules for destroying broad types of documents. But then besides that, when they want to get rid of specific types of documents, the agency sends a request, a proposal.
You're breaking up there. You're
okay,
breaking
is
up
this
there.
Better? Is
yeah.
this better?
There you go.
Okay.
Yes.
Then someone at the National Archives, who's usually an analyst, and they probably don't know a lot about the issues or the documents that are on this list, they almost automatically give it a tentative approval. And once it gets a tentative approval, about once or twice a month, the National Archives puts an announcement in Federal Register. And I don't know about you, but that's not on my weekly reading list. And there's probably many Americans that haven't even heard of it, much less ever looked at it. So when they put it in the Federal Register, then the proposals open to the public comment for 30 days. So the National Archives doesn't post their appraisals of the proposals, so which are crucial documents, on its website, even though they easily could. So someone has to call and ask for them, which is what Russ Kick did. And he got them and shared them with a lot of people on his website, altgov.2.org. And after the public comment period, there's even no way to check on the status of the proposal on the National Archives website. You'd have to call to ask, has it been approved yet? Basically, the National Archivist will sign the final approval, and it shows up either on the National Archives records control schedules or another page. But, you know, there's no big announcement to the public on what, you know, the final when or what it's been. So.
Okay. Yeah, remember back when we were fighting the USDA, and they had up on the Federal Register this comment period, and overnight 60,000 comments disappeared, got wiped off of there. And when we were fighting, because people were just commenting like crazy, because we directed everybody there, and they were commenting, and overnight, remember that, Deb? That's been, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago?
Yeah.
And they wiped all those comments off of there, and then came out with a statement saying that the only ones they left were ones that were pro what they were doing, and said, you know, there seems to be, you know, public consensus that, you know, this is what we need to do. And I honest to God, I was so mad, I couldn't stand it. But even there on the Federal Register, there is no assurance that the commenting that comes in. And Deb, what effect does that commenting have as to whether or not this gets entered on the Federal Register?
I don't know, because I don't think anybody hardly ever – nobody knows about it, so nobody comments on it. And it's only – Russ Kick actually was one of the people that when the USDA was taking off all their data about animals, you know, animal welfare data, he actually got it and archived it on his website so it would be available to the public. And I think Rachel Maddow interviewed him. You know, he actually does a lot getting FOIAs and making them public. But there's not a lot of – it's not well known. So I think, to my knowledge, this is the first time this issue has really been made public, the whole process, how you know, opaque it is. You know, nobody really realizes the difference between someone filing a Freedom of Information Act and having to go to the National Archives to find something. And I'll give you an example. I wanted to find, you know, we're trying to find stuff about the wild horses and burros. And in all my years, I had never seen the first map of herd areas. And this was done around 1971 when Congress passed an act to protect the wild horses and burros. They were supposed to be designated protected areas where they were found. Well, you know, I don't think they even did a census for a few years after that. Their first census, after they had time to ask ranchers to, you know, get any of your horses you own off. And 70 ranchers in Nevada claimed they own 7,000 wild horses. So they were cleaning house before the map was done or before the census was done. So anyhow, I'd never seen the map of their first map of the areas. So I filed a FOIA with Bureau of Land Management. They didn't have it, and they suggested I call the Office of the Secretary of the Interior, or file it with the Office of the Secretary of Interior. So I filed it with Ryan Zinke's office. They don't have a copy of the map. They suggested I contact the National Archives. I contacted the National Archives, and they were very nice, and, you know, they were at least kind and wrote me a nice letter about what group it would be in and where I might find it. But I spent all day long at a local National Archives looking through just only one box of stuff, because you have to go page by page. It's not like, oh, this is a box of maps. It's about wild horses and burros, and here's three boxes, and, you know, these are from these years. So you just have to plow through it. So it takes someone that's very dedicated to do this, and even journalists and researchers, it just makes it really difficult for them to find something. So that's the big deal. about when government agencies transfer something to the National Archives, I think it makes it almost like a black hole. Maybe not really, but
yeah.
A National Archives person, you know, if you file a FOIA with them, they'll try and help you, but they can only tell you general things. They would have to sit there all day and look for the same thing you're looking for, only they don't even know what they're looking for exactly. So,
well, you
I
know
think,
what gets me about this
issue.
At the National Archives, if this is the final resting place for these documents, why aren't they using a document locator service? Which would tell you, you know, you could scan a page, you know, on the computer and find out.
Maybe they are.
Yeah.
I'm brand new to it, but even then, that would be
yeah.
a huge undertaking. And with all these records
yeah.
that the Department of Interior is sending to them, they could be swamped
yeah.
for the next 20 years trying to
yeah.
you know, scan all that. And I was thinking
yeah.
even some of these forms, like Department of Interior for Wild Horses Borough, they want to get rid of all the shipping records and government bills of lading. Government bills of lading, they're related. The government bill of lading shows the amount of money they pay to a trucker. I'll use Wild Horses and Borough as an example again. So I requested some government bills of lading, and I saw a shipment going from, I think, Elm Creek, Nebraska, and it stopped. It was supposed to go to Mississippi, Piney Woods, Mississippi. And I saw that it was going to stop in some of Paul's Valley in Oklahoma or something like that. Well, it shows how many horses were loaded on the truck. So the taxpayer pays, like, say, $5,000 to ship 20-something horses, who knows, to Piney Woods, Mississippi. But yet, and I looked at the shipping records, and so they'll have all the freeze mark numbers of each and every horse because it's kind of vague. You know, it'll say a truck, a government bill of lading can say a truck full. But the shipping record shows, oh, there were these 33 wild horses, and here's their freeze mark number and everything, going from this address to this
okay.
address. So it's a little bit, it's a different form. Well, I compared those two forms to the facility report, and the facility didn't get all those horses. So taxpayers paid all the money, but they didn't get there. Where did they go? So that was in our white paper. So I used samples of that in the white paper, and our white paper was just issued last year. So the Department of Interior, I'm sure they've seen the white paper because we gave it to many members of Congress, and it's on our website. It's available to the public. You know, they should know there's public interest in these records. So why now do they want to get rid of them within 3 years?
Because there's public interest in them. Before, nobody even knew it was going on, and it's one of the problems with the Internet, why they hate the Internet so bad and want to control it is. Deb, remember when they first started loading onto the net government records? And I can't remember the congressman's name, said it was a massive expense and a colossal waste of time because nobody was interested. And it turned out to be one of the most highly trafficked sectors of the net was people going and
mm-hmm.
looking at these documents of all kinds. Historical documents, things like what you're talking about here, contracting, leasing, you know, all this stuff. They absolutely couldn't believe the traffic. And to this day, it's still one of the most highly trafficked sections of the net. And that is government documents. Yeah.
And you know why? Raw data is important. As you know,
yes.
these so-called, quote-unquote, scientific studies are skewed towards a desired outcome often. So the
right.
American people are
yep.
only left, if they only have a summary or a finished product and they don't see the raw data that behind it, it's like reading Cliff Notes instead of reading a book. Basically,
right.
these government agencies are destroying history and their reason for their actions.
Right. Well,
and right now,
thing too. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well,
okay.
What I was going to say was this is exactly it. And it's also, like you say, a backdoor attempt to stop freedom of information. If they get away with it, the information you need to argue your side of things is gone. Remember when
mm-hmm.
you had Craig Downer on and you were all
mm-hmm.
over talking about the environmental impact studies and come to find out they were never done?
Mm-hmm.
They just claimed that they were, and then they went after the fact and actually did them, and of course produced one that was conducive to their argument, which Craig, as I recall, efficiently took that apart. But this is a thing. These are documents in history that we have a right to. We have a right to know about. Mm-hmm. We are funding all of this. And mm-hmm. so we have a right to know what was done. Go ahead.
As you know, in our white paper, we realized the Information Act request for certain records and comparing them with what was online, that the BLM hadn't accounted for, like, over 30,000 wild horses that had been captured. They weren't even on their records over a 20-year period or something. So that was one issue. But I think it's important to know there's a lot of issues that as we look at records, say population estimates. Right now, there's the BLM tells all the media, oh, there's an overpopulation of wild horses. Well, as you know, when we look at the raw data, like from aerial flyovers or things like that, in one area, I think there was only like 70 burros, and somehow the final count in the report came up with like 1,400. It was 1,000, and they added another 400 for good measure. So if the raw data is important for getting the truth.
Right.
You know, and it's absolutely essential to the American public.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. But this also, you know, like I say, this what is there is documentation and proof that they have absolutely ignored, if not intentionally violated, standing law. They don't follow their own rules and regulations. Those will only apply to somebody else when it's, you know, conducive to what they want to get done. And so these are things that by extension violate our rights, because what they're doing there affects all of us. It doesn't just affect
mm-hmm.
the people in Washington, D.C. It affects all of us. And
it does.
We have
every
a right
American.
To know. Yes.
Luckily,
we have a right.
Marty, there's many. Yeah. Luckily, right now, there are many government transparency and environmental advocacy groups who are currently reviewing mm-hmm. all of these records and addressing this issue. And some other groups right now, besides Russ Kick and altgov2.org, are Government Information Watch, Government Accountability Project, which is whistleblower.org, and Open the Government.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, I know there's a lot of groups and really taking a hard look at what's happening with this. It's not,
yes.
I mean, this has been going on for a while, but I think it's just really
yes.
reached public awareness. And one thing I want to
yes.
mention too, Marty, when I look at these requests as they exist, sometimes they're changing the cutoff dates. This is when they close the records, like annually or upon some event, and they're increasing some of the retention periods. But what they're really doing, they also added this language called some records will be destroyed when they are no longer needed. Well, who decides when something is no longer needed? You know,
yes.
Would that
there
be the archivist, an analyst, the archive, our national archivist? Because how would they know a lot about these issues to know why they might be needed or the importance of them? You know, they're not experts
yeah.
in all fields. So that's why it's important these records are available for the public, period.
I have a comment here that says document destruction hobbles whistleblowing and discovery. And there again, this is what we're trying to highlight here, is if they get away with this, you won't be able to discover anything. It'll be erased. You'll have no evidence. And as we've told many people on several shows about various topics, you run across important government documents, make a hard copy. Store it on your computer, but make a hard copy also. You might need it with that URL intact so that you can show that it did exist. And they wiped it out. But start making hard copies. Keep a record of what you find, because it will disappear. There is I just think this is the tip of the iceberg on this. The whistleblowing has become so pronounced. There are so many people stepping forward, talking about issues, everything from USDA, FDA, Veterans Affairs, I mean, across the board. So many people stepping forward out of these agencies and talking about the corruption, the fraud, abuse, the waste, the misuse and abuse of systems and programs, and the waste of money to taxpayers. And as we've highlighted on the shows with the forestry women, every time they charge one of these higher-ups with sexual molestation or assault, intimidation, retaliation, the taxpayer pays for all the attorney fees, pays any fees, fines, or restitution. It isn't that person who got charged. That comes out of our pocket. I think that's a pretty handy deal to have going if you're the guy that can't keep his hands to himself. This would destroy any of that, like Lisa Donnelly from Forestry has been fighting this for 25 years, the assault on women and men in forestry. As I've said many times on those shows, it's no wonder they can't get a fire put out. They're so busy doing things they ought not to be doing, they couldn't pay attention to a fire. But this would destroy all of those records. This would destroy that paper trail that you need to get these people into court. But there again, like I say, the thing we have stressed on those shows is it's the taxpayers who foot the bill for this. What they're doing is going to bounce back on us, if in no other way, economically. It's going to hit us in our pocket. So you need to think about it. If you can't think about it any other way, think about it from that aspect. And why would they want to destroy documents if what you're doing is on the up and up and it's a clear and concise history of the business of your agency? What business do you have destroying? I can't destroy records for a minimum of 7 years.
What I was wondering, who decided, when I'm looking at all these categories of records, you know, and all of Department of Interior's agencies, like all the categories, who decided, oh, we're going to destroy this? And why? Who decided this? Was it a committee? Who was the committee? It's almost like I was almost wondering, looking at this, if special interests had a hand in suggesting what documents might be removed to protect them in the future. When I started looking at all the offshore oil things, the mining, the oil and gas, it was a lot of it included compliance, you know, compliance and reports of, you know, contamination and things like that. And I would think we need to keep that permanently as a record of what happens maybe past 50 years, maybe past 75 years. It should be permanent. These records should not be destroyed. So,
well, and see, and I wonder too, like about it, all these toxic dump sites that are all over the country. You can locate a lot of them because we got a military base built over the top of them, and people come off of these bases sick as hell because of it. But we have all of these, the Department of Interior supposedly oversees many of these. So are they going to destroy? You know that we found out when we were working on all this other stuff that they can sell you land under which there is a toxic waste dump, and they don't have to tell you it's there. And two things that will cue you up that there is a dump down there is that, number one, the land will be way cheaper than what it ought to be, and number two, you can't sink footings more than 8 feet. And those are two big red flags that land underneath it is sitting a load of contaminated something or other. We have to
look at some of the land swaps that are being done. Is the BLM giving some private interest a good land and then taking land that's basically contaminated, you know, as a favor? Okay, we'll swap out this land. I mean, there's a lot going on with all of this. Yeah, basically it covers every government agency, these destruction of records. So it's an issue that really needs to come to the forefront of public attention, in my opinion.
Well, go ahead.
It's even with Freedom of Information Act, it's very frustrating trying to get records. As you know,
you're breaking up again, Deb.
Okay. Is this better?
You'll try it again. Yeah, there you go.
Is this better? Okay. Freedom Federation and I have had to file about 9 FOIA lawsuits in the last few years to try and get records. They just won't send them. So basically, it's just frustrating. There's many, many ways to frustrate efforts of regular Americans just trying to get. What I was noticing when I was looking at all these requests was the cutoff. It says cutoff as instructed in Bureau Office Records Manual. Well, I'm thinking, what manual are they talking about? I sent an email to the BLM's records office asking what manual. And so he responds that BLM's records manual is marked internal, pursuant to BLM's directives manual linked below. Therefore, the manual is not publicly accessible. Now, why would government agency manuals, which are their policies and operating instructions, be withheld from the public?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So anyhow,
exactly.
I think he was referring to BLM's handbook H-1270-4 for records disposition, and luckily I found it online, and I shared the link with a lot of other people who might want to make a public comment so they could compare that date to the 1 year or whatever, you know. So
yeah, and when is the starting date for the 1 year? Is it from the
at
date
the cutoff.
Document's
well,
created?
It could be the end of the fiscal year. It could be the cutoff date. Something specially designated. Yeah, it's very, you know, it's all kind of loosey-goosey.
Yeah, holy crap. But, you know, and when you see them purging something like this, and this is a purge, they're getting rid of evidence. Mm-hmm. Now, let's take this into the private sector. If you had been doing business other than what was lawful, what you were required to do under whatever business you're operating, and you started destroying documents because you had been doing everything you shouldn't be doing, and you'd run a bunch of dirty deals, and you had contracted against the public, blah, 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 and you got caught destroying records, you'd go to prison for that. Now,
mm-hmm.
why can a federal agency, which is supposed to be accountable to the American public, able to destroy documents that might be necessary to prove a case? This
mm-hmm.
is destruction
mm-hmm.
of evidence. This is no different than, you know, some big corporation, which they are a big corporation, but running in and shredding documents that they're shredding it to get rid
mm-hmm.
of it so you can't prove anything. And
mm-hmm.
so this is why I say again, when you run across things on the net, important documents, pieces of legislation, whatever it is, copy it, download it to your computer, and make a hard copy of it with that URL and tag
mm-hmm.
so that it shows that it did exist, even if they shredded the document, here it is. And this basically is what this amounts to, Deb. This is a big shredding operation. We're getting rid
oh,
of evidence.
And, you know, and to preface this, I don't think the American public really realize how much information has been taken offline. For instance, I used to be able to go to the Bureau of Reclamation website and find out how many currently abandoned mines there were that needed reclamation, you know, in other words, there's been contamination. Now, I'd probably have to go look at public land statistics to find that information. I'm not even sure. Yeah, so it's you know, people used to be able to go to, like, instead of just one national portal for the Bureau of Land Management, they used to have, each state had a website, and you could click on the district offices, and all in one place, you
yes.
could say, okay, in this district, this is what's happening with mining. This is what's happening with oil and gas. This is what's happening with wild horses. You know, this is this and this. Well, now it would be very hard to put that information together in that sense that makes, you know,
right.
in an easy format where you could find it. And you used
well,
to be able
know,
to
Deb,
look up the directories
oh,
with the employees' names and their titles and their email addresses. So say if you were interested in finding out about a mining project and its effects were going to be on the water in that area, and you wanted to email the hydrologist to ask a question, you could go and look at the directory and find his email or his phone number and call. Now they'll have just the main office, but how do you know who the people are that work there or what they do? You know, so it's
yeah.
just really our government is so much less transparent in the last few years. And I don't think it
yeah.
has anything to do with Democrat or Republican or
I don't
who's
either.
In office. It's been moving this way, you know,
yes.
unfortunately.
Yes. I know up here in Minnesota, up by the Boundary Waters, which is north of me up here, a couple hundred miles, they're wanting to put it, you remember Polymet Mines, we dealt with them before,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to come in up
yeah.
here and do copper mining right at the Boundary Waters, right over the top of our water supply again. So, and the Department
mm-hmm.
of Interior is very involved in that, in pressing to get these leases for this copper mining approved. Now, you and I both know that the tailing ponds from copper mining are highly toxic, and
mm-hmm.
they only put up an earthen dam which they fail every time. I don't know why we keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And if this stuff is let loose, it will contaminate water for hundreds and hundreds of miles for hundreds of years. Yet they want to do copper mining up there in one of the most pristine areas in the country. I don't get it. They're also very active in the DAPL and XL pipelines, which we fought over there in North Dakota and South Dakota to keep that from going through. And that comes right over the top of the Ogallala Aquifer, which is also a source of our water up here in the Midwest, clear down to Texas. That comes out of Canada and goes clear down to Texas. And they, you know, and then Trump comes out and signs an executive order and says it can go through, even though the people have said no. But this, I don't, they're destroying evidence. They're destroying the paper trail. They are destroying anything that would allow you to fight back, that would show the corruption.
Also,
go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. In this grouping from Department of Interior, the grouping of records they want destroyed, after 3 years after they cut off, they want to destroy all resource activity plan records. Now, what this is, resource activity plans are prepared once a resource management plan is approved, and basically they address specific activities like the BLM programs, like grazing, forestry, fish and wildlife, law enforcement, borough, recreation, archaeology, soil, water, air, blah, blah, wilderness. So why do they want to destroy all those records? That's really wiping out their history of their actions.
Yes. Well, and it's wiping out our history, too. The thing about public lands is the federal government calls them public lands, but they are anything but. We have no access to them. A lot of times we have to pay to even enter them. They can prevent us from entering them. They take all the resources out of them, and where the money goes for that, I don't know. It sure doesn't come my way or yours. But this is... We can't let this happen. We cannot let this happen. What happened to all those sunshine laws, transparency and all of that stuff that, everybody was harping about? This is a government we're paying for, and all these agencies that are all privately owned corporations contracted to the federal corporations as a governmental services corporation and contract. But we are funding this. We are funding what they are attempting to do.
It's a giant smoke and mirrors act. That's what I'm seeing. Because what I'm seeing right now, and again, I'm going to use a specific example with the wild horses and burros, the Bureau of Land Management has decided just to combine adoptions and sales. These are two different things. And the reason this is so important is because now they're after a very short time, maybe a year after cutoff or 3 years or 5 years, I have to look at the specifics. I think it's either a year or 3 years off the top of my head, but they want to destroy these records, I think, because the Department of Interior is planning to send America's wild horses and burros to countries like Russia, Guyana, Afghanistan. If they were even sent on ships over to Russia, if they even live that long, there's plans they want to put them on a Siberian tiger refuge. And even the people that were planning to do this email show, they were talking about feeding the Russian soldiers during a famine with our wild horses. So that's how they would get the Russian government. They were trying to figure out ways to agree. And they talked about once they shipped them over, they might have to slaughter some of them, pay for the shipping of all of them. So there's a lot of smarmy stuff going on in the background,
Yeah. Yeah, when you first started really hammering this wild horse thing, and remember the videos came out of that Couture ranch outfit using the helicopters to chase down the herds, and then they were herded into those pens, and they used cattle prods on them, they did everything, and we saw particularly the stallions would become so defensive trying to defend their mares and the foals and stuff that they would ram the fences to the point they broke their own necks. We saw baby foals run till their hoofs came off. We saw helicopters come down on the backs of these animals, all of it in violation of the Wild Horse and Burro Protection Act. And even at that, where there was video proving the law breaking, It just continues on. They keep doing it, and nobody will do anything. I get so tired that the law means nothing in this country. It means absolutely nothing unless it can be used to persecute you. And you being anybody who isn't corporately connected, who isn't making money off of all of it, who isn't tied to somebody so-and-so that's really important, the common people, this is who it's used against. But everybody else seems to be able to do whatever they want to do. They can violate any of these laws.
They're above the law. Basically, it's regulatory capture. Like on this National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board, probably only two people, maybe three on there, really care about the horses. The rest of them are special interests and want to kill off the wild horses. And, you know, they have secretive meetings that the government – taxpayers pay the government to go to these secret meetings and speak and take part in it, but it's not open to the public. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on right now that just, regardless if anyone cares about wild horses or not, it's the government acting in a secretive manner. It's we're losing government transparency and accountability, and it's getting worse every day from what I see.
Yes, it is. When I look at all of, the lawsuits that have been filed, all the FOIA requests, they know we're watching. They know we're aware. They know that this is a huge movement to stop this. And so I see this as a last-ditch effort at CYA, you know, cover your behind. Because this has gotten too hot. Go ahead.
Some of the Forest Service documents that the Forest Service wants to destroy are its own Office of Inspector General files on environmental compliance problems, you know. So they're trying to cover up whatever they're doing.
Forestry has got to be, I swear, next to the USDA in general, forestry has got to be one of the most dysfunctional, mismanaged, inefficient, ineffective waste of taxpayer money going. This outfit, I just cannot believe what has gone on in there. And what they have seen is like the people that help perpetrate it, even when they're outed for their corruption, what happens to them is they get promoted and get pay raises. They get promoted.
And the people that were victims, are driven out.
Get retaliated again and, against and intimidated and threatened. And to me, this is – when this kind of stuff goes on, this is just a big indicator. You need to shut that down. Lawrence is always saying, who runs the co-host with me for the USDA show, that they need to go into receivership. And I think all these government agencies do. And receivership, he said, would make them get in line. And they couldn't take back over their own agency until they had everything working the way it was supposed to. It would force them to comply.
Like following laws and stuff? Following laws.
Little stuff like that, You know, those unimportant things that just nag at you. And but I just think it's stunning that they would even announce that they were contemplating this. Now what I figured, Deb, and you and I both know from experience, when they come out and say that we're thinking about doing this, what do you think? They've already started doing it.
And if they've not already done it, you know. They've already got the plans. And what I'm finding with the Bureau of Land Management, even when they're way along in their plans, like they've already decided they're going to ship American horses to Guyana, they don't tell the public. They're not informing the public. The only way I found out about it was through Freedom of Information Act documents.
Wow.
Don't even announce it to the public. They don't even bring it up at their National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board meetings. They don't even tell those members that they're doing this, unless they just secretly tell some of them and not others.
I don't know, Deb. We've been doing this, on the wild horses for, you're coming up on your fifth anniversary show.
I was doing it before I've been interested in the wild horses for about, since 2010. So that's about 8 years. I've been writing articles about that. And what it's pointed out, Marty, not only do I look at wild horses and burros, as you know, I'm looking at the water. I'm looking at the mining. I'm looking at oil and gas. I'm looking at, you know, everything else that's going on in those areas, geothermal, you know, a lot, water pipelines, a lot of other issues. And, you know, on Wild Horse and Burro Radio, we've had a lot of experts coming on to talk about everything from our crops being irrigated with oil and gas wastewater to, you know, pesticides. You know, we had Carrie Gillum on talking about Monsanto's glyphosate, which is their Roundup, and her new book, Whitewash. So we've covered a variety, animal welfare, a variety of issues. And it's all tied together. It's all tied together.
Yes.
I can look at this Department of Interior thing and I see things about, you know, they're throwing away records about the endangered species and fish and wildlife data. You know, I'm seeing things about geothermal records, mining records. But it's all tied together. So any one thing, if they get rid of records, it throws off the overall understanding of what's happening.
Right. I agree. And even if they only get rid of a part of it, now you don't have the whole puzzle. And
you don't
have
the whole
gap,
puzzle.
And you'll have the gap in your investigation, and the documents aren't there because they've destroyed them. Like I say, and we know from experience, whenever they come out and announce something like this, they're already doing it. They're already destroying, have been destroying, and this is the cover. This is the cover here for what they were already doing. Well, we want to get, we've already got it done, but somebody might tell on us. We might have another one of those damn whistleblowers come out and talk about us destroying documents.
We better say something about it. Well, and what people may not realize, too, like the Bureau of Land Management, they have teams of PR people putting the spin on things. So they put out, like with us, Wild Horse and Burro Issues, if any of us, you know, we come out with something like this, it goes on an alert email to all the managers and, you know, like 20 people. Oh, alert. Or you might get questions from the media about this. Don't answer. Send it to here. Here's what we're going to say. Here's our talking points. They have teams, any issue, they have teams of PR people spinning how they want to present this to the American public and who their adversaries might be, you know, the advocacy and what they might say. So here's how we're going to be. So they're figuring out how to lie to the American public. And our tax dollars, we're paying for it to be lied to, basically.
That's exactly kind of what it is. And that is exactly what it is. These people, the idea that they've got PR people who are commissioned to what do I want to say, skew what the public hears and how they hear it. And these people also are the same ones who will set up phone banks or computer banks. They will get online. They'll have keywords. These are astroturfers. They have keywords. And like it'll say the Department of Interior. And so if anything is mentioned about the Department of Interior, it gives them a Google alert. And they go and look at it. And if it's something the department finds detrimental, then these astroturfers are paid to get on there and attack the writer, attack other posters, make all sorts of wild, and they absolutely disrupt the whole comment section of on an article.
Well,
and attack.
Yeah, they try and discredit you. And as you know, I remember one time a long ago, many, many years ago, I wrote an article about mining or something, and somebody, you know, commented on there, and I thought, well, wow, that was kind of a negative comment. And I went and I saw this personal email address. Well, it turns out to be a guy that worked for mining for the BLM in Nevada. Remember that?
Yes.
And,
yeah.
So I sent him an email, and I asked him if he was writing that email as a BLM representative or – you know, personally, and he goes, I was on my lunch hour at work, blah, 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 you know, even though it was 10 in the morning, you know, like work hours for most people, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's not just that they're even reading, they're trying to discredit anyone that opposes what they might be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're paying for that, too. And they've always, don't you find it odd that they can always find people willing in exchange for money to get up and say anything, no matter how stupid or erroneous it is, no matter how wildly deceitful it is, there's always people willing to get up and say whatever they need them to say. And
especially, you know, people go back and listen to that radio show with Carrie Gillum, because she kind of detailed this, how, and we're dealing with this with the Wild Horse of Burro issue with the University of Utah. You know, they probably get grant money from the BLM or from, you know, livestock industry or special interest. So then they hire professionals to do these studies. And I remember hearing about one of them about how wild horses displace other species, you know, birds or other animals with watering things. And I looked at this guy's parameters for his test, and I'm not a scientist, but I thought he didn't show what other water holes were around these water holes. And maybe those other animals never went to those water holes. They might have migrated along a different path. So he had nothing to back up whatever his theory was for this. I mean, it was just, you could poke, had more holes than Swiss cheese. And I could see that right off the bat.
Well, and then they never explain, nobody ever attempts to explain how, even if they were using the same watering areas, they managed to survive before the BLM came along. They were doing quite well. How do you explain that?
Yeah.
They weren't doing poorly until you showed up.
At the beginning of the century, there were millions of horses, and we had a lot of water then, and all the wildlife was doing well, you know. But suddenly, you know, after all these other uses to the BLM, now suddenly the few wild horses that are remaining are doing, they're doing all the damage. Nope, close your eyes. It's not mining. Yeah. It's not livestock grazing. It's not oil and gas. It's those few wild horses with their little ribs. Yeah.
There you go. Deb, we've only got about 3 minutes left here. Will you give out, like, information on Wild Horse Freedom Federation and Straight from Horse's Heart and all that?
So Wild Horse Freedom Federation is wildhorsefreedomfederation.org. If you go on there, be sure and, you know, look at Wild Horse and Burro Radio. We've got, you know, 5 years' worth of shows archived with different group, environmental groups, animal welfare groups, a lot of different issues covered. You'd probably find it very interesting. Next Wednesday night's our 5th year anniversary show, and many of our past guests will be calling in. We've got a white paper that we presented to Congress, and it's online with the exhibits for the public. And we also have under our tab for, I think it's action, there's documentation, and it's called The Truth. And we actually publish FOIA documents that we get for the public. You know, I usually tell a little bit about what people are going to be seeing in these documents and why it's a big deal, and then we publish the documents as they are, so anyone can, you know, look for themselves. And this is why these records are so important. That's how you find the truth.
Yes.
It's just you can come to your own conclusion. You don't need somebody else, a third party, to tell you what your conclusion should be. So we like to think for
there
ourselves.
There you go. Well, and that's the last thing they want you to do, and you know it's true.
Yeah.
They don't want you to be thinking at all. That's the whole thing right there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Tell people to go to altgov2.org, altgov2.org, Russ Kicks, and check out all the other people, too, that are trying to bring this issue to the forefront.
Okay. All right, thank you. And then Deb, a lot of her work and that is done through Wild Horse Freedom Federation is also up on Straight from the Horse's Heart, and that's hosted by R.T. Fitch, who's the president of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. There's a lot of stuff. Carol Walker every year puts out a beautiful, beautiful calendar on the wild with the wild horses, and it's to help raise funds. Absolutely stunning photographs, but there's a lot going on there. We need to address this again. So Debbie, I'm going to want you to come back after we get some more work done on this and watch that Federal Register and see what happens there. See if they actually do get authorization. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And again, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit in Washington, D.C., held every July. And we will be back there again this year. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. It's been a great show. Deb, thank you for coming on. I truly appreciate it. And we'll talk to you all next week. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.